where Shelton comes for news and talk. The Lisa Wexler Show, now on Southern Connecticut's news and information leader, WICC 600.
Welcome back. Well, this disease, Lyme disease, was named after all, after Lyme, Connecticut. So let's not forget that we have a lot of ticks here. In fact, I just took one off of the dogs yesterday. So, was it yesterday? No, it was the day before yesterday when it was 56 degrees, and ticks love 56 degrees. Joining us right now is Dr. Errol Fickrig of Yale, who investigates vector-borne diseases and specializes particularly in Lyme, West Nile, and a lot of other tick-borne diseases, and a lot of what he calls vector-borne diseases. We'll find out what this is. A lot of these diseases can cause fatalities if you're unlucky or you have a compromised immune system to begin with or you're left untreated. Dr. Fickrig was trained at Cornell, Vanderbilt, and Yale, and he joins us right now to talk about why he says his Lyme vaccine is the first of its kind. Dr. Fickrig, welcome to the Lisa Wexler Show today. Thank you so much for coming on.
Hi, Lisa. How are you?
I'm great. I'm great. So, doctor, am I right about the ticks? They're actually alive and well here in January, which is shocking for Connecticut.
Ticks are usually quiet in the winter, but it's been a rather warm winter. So, yes, there are some ticks out there.
It was shocking for me to take a live one off of my doggie, my little white dog. So, doctor, can you tell us, Dr. Fickrig, what do you mean by a vector-borne disease, and how does that differ, for example, from COVID?
A vector-borne disease is something transmitted by an insect or another arthropod, like a tick. So when you think of vector-borne diseases, you think of things like malaria, dengue virus, and locally you think of things like Lyme disease or West Nile virus, which is mosquito-borne.
And you've been interested in this research for a long time. How long of your own career have you spent in the lab trying to study this thing and figure it out?
That's correct. I've been working on Lyme disease and related related infections for several decades now.
Wow, you look too young. So, Dr. Fickrig, tell me, you think that you've invented a different kind of vaccine? Tell us about it.
So most vaccines that we've taken, that you've taken, that I've taken, they target the bacteria or they target the pathogen. So what we've tried to do in this case is something different. We've targeted the tick. So this vaccine works by making it so when a tick tries to feed on you, it can't feed properly. It begins to take a blood meal, it goes, I don't like this, and it falls off. So when the tick falls off early, there's less of a chance that you can get Lyme disease.
That's right. The tick has to stick on for a good long time. I know that. That's why I don't worry that much. Yeah. Yeah.
24 to 36 hours is what it usually takes for a tick to feed before the Lyme agent, Borrelia, can be transmitted to you.
Right. That's why if I see a tick sort of moving around and I know that I've showered recently before and I take it off, I really don't worry that much about it. It's if I find something embedded in my scalp or my toe or my knee that I would worry about it, that I maybe haven't seen it. That's right.
That's correct. If a tick is crawling on you, you don't need to worry about Lyme disease. If it's embedded in you and it's plump, so you can squeeze it a bit, meaning it's taken a blood meal, then it's more likely you could get Lyme disease.
Exactly. 203-333-9422. If you've got a question about Lyme, we're chatting with one of the country's leading experts on Lyme. So you came up with this novel idea of attacking the ticks. So let me ask you this. Are all ticks responding to this thing that you've done to our blood in the same way? Do all ticks not like this?
The vaccine that we've made seems to target the Lyme disease tick, commonly called the deer tick, or scientifically Ixodes scapularis. You're right, there are other ticks out there. There's the dog tick, which is called Dermacentor, and there are other ticks as well, the Lone Star tick called Amblyomma. And we don't know yet that this vaccine would work against those other ticks.
Has this vaccine been tested in people yet, doctor?
No, not yet. The results are only in animal models. The animal model we've tested it in so far is a guinea pig, and that's where all of our results come from. So it needs to be examined in humans. Just because something works in an animal doesn't mean it'll work in a human.
Okay, and so, but in the animals, you've put this vaccine on, and then what do? Do you dip them in a lot of ticks, or do you try one or two ticks at a time? What do you do?
We do it different ways. The first experiments are we place a lot of ticks on the guinea pigs after they've been vaccinated, about 20 or 30, and we watch those ticks every day and ask the question, how many ticks attached to the guinea pigs? Was there redness at the bite site, something that would be itching? And do the ticks fall off early? And we examine that in our control guinea pigs and the experimental guinea pigs, and we do that in a fashion where we don't know which animal is which, and that tells us if there's a difference in what the ticks are doing. And it's quite clear that there's a big difference. There's redness at the bite site when the ticks feed on a vaccinated animal, and there's not redness at the bite site when the ticks feed on the control or the unvaccinated animals.
What is it that you've... Yeah, go ahead. Yep. Keep going. No, I want to hear.
You have to ask yourself the question, if you can recognize a tick bite early, what are you going to do? Now, right. When you get bitten by a mosquito, your response is it hurts you and you swat it. No one ever swats a tick bite. You don't swat a tick bite because it's a silent bite. But if we can make it so that a tick bite is no longer silent, that you feel it, that there's some itching, some redness, you're going to recognize it earlier. And if you recognize it earlier, I don't know anybody who, once they recognize a tick bite, they let the tick keep feeding. You're going to pull it off with tweezers almost immediately.
So we're chatting with Dr. Errol Fickrig. So, Dr. Fickrig, is there some mechanism that you're trying to create in this vaccine that makes a human being know when they are, when they have a tick on their body?
That's correct. We're trying to make it so that you recognize a tick bite earlier so it's not so silent anymore.
So how do you do this? Like, tell me about this. Like, what agents are you putting in this vaccine that do this?
So when a tick bites you, it inserts its needle, also called a hypostome, into your skin. And then before it takes a blood meal, it secretes a lot of salivary proteins. Ticks have saliva, just like we have saliva. And those salivary proteins have special properties, including making it so the tick bite is silent or numb, making it so the ticks can take a good blood meal. So in our mRNA vaccine, we've made mRNAs that correspond to some of these tick salivary proteins. So now your body has an early recognition system to identify the tick salivary proteins, and by doing so, it can attack them early and prevent them from doing their job at the bite site.
So this mRNA is a concept that most people never heard of before COVID. Can you explain why, or in general, give us some reinforcement or confirmation about how the mRNA approach in general to vaccines for COVID and this, you know, what that's about and why that is qualitatively different and why it's good?
So it's just different. It doesn't mean it's better or worse. In a traditional vaccine, what you do is you make the protein, and then you inject the protein as the vaccine. And we're actually doing those studies with our anti-tick vaccine as well right now. With the mRNA vaccine, you inject the mRNA, and your body makes that into protein. So your own body makes the protein rather than having the protein injected. And that's the difference. The end result is the same. You have an immune response to a specific protein.
Okay. So, and what is mRNA? It's messenger RNA, but what is it? Where does it come from? Does it come from something in a lab, or is it taken out of a human body and then fidgeted with in a lab? What is mRNA?
So we all make mRNAs. Our genetic code is DNA. DNA becomes RNA, and there's messenger RNAs, which are specific sequences of RNA, which we then make into protein. So your whole body is there because sometime along the way you've had mRNAs for every protein that your body makes. So what we've done is make mRNAs for some of the tick salivary proteins based on the known sequences, DNA, on the known DNA sequences that encode those proteins.
Does this all come down to the CRISPR technology, Dr. Fickrig? Is this because of CRISPR that you can unravel things so well?
No, CRISPR is very important technology, but this is not related to CRISPR, no.
Okay. I was wondering, because I know CRISPR lets you splice and dice genes. So I was wondering if it lets you... Yeah. I was wondering if it lets you splice and dice mRNA also. I didn't know.
For what we're doing right now, CRISPR is not related to that.
Okay. We're chatting with Dr. Errol Fickrig, and we're learning about Lyme. Right now, what are the options for human beings to prevent Lyme disease? What have we got?
The best way to prevent Lyme disease is to be diligent. So if you go out in the woods and hike or do other activities which put you at risk for Lyme disease, you check yourself as best you can in the evening. So remember, ticks don't usually feed immediately. They search on your body to find an appropriate site to bite, and then they take their time taking a blood meal. So when you've been exposed to a tick, you usually have about 24 to 36 hours in which you can remove the tick and have a very low chance of getting Lyme disease, because it takes a long time for the Lyme agent, also known as Borrelia, to be transmitted from the tick to you. That may not be the case with some other tick-borne diseases, which are transmitted more rapidly. One that you may have heard of is called Powassan virus or anaplasmosis.
Yes, these are terrible.
These are other tick-borne diseases that get transmitted more rapidly. So this approach, this prevention approach, is less likely to be successful for those microbes.
You know what I do? I once had a Lyme disease person on who was not a doctor, but somebody who was in the movement of awareness and fundraising for people that have Lyme disease. And she told me a tip that I have done ever since. When I come back from a walk in the woods, I basically take off my sweatpants, I take off anything that could have touched the ground, and I throw it into the dryer at high heat. And that way I'll kill anything that might have been like near, you know, on my clothes or on my body. I throw in my socks, my shoes, and my sweatpants. I just throw them right in, and my sweatshirt. Anything that could have been outside, I just throw it right in the dryer.
Well, ticks don't like high temperatures. Another way to look at it is if you wear clothes that are light, white clothes, when you're out in the woods, it's much easier to identify a tick on a white background than, let's say, a darker background, like a brown or a green background.
Let me ask you this, doctor. We're chatting with Dr. Errol Fickrig, 203-333-9422. I have a very dear friend who got COVID pretty badly at least once, maybe twice. Even though she was vaccinated and everything else, she got it early and then seems to have gotten it again. But her Lyme symptoms have come back, and she feels like her whole immune system is out of whack again. She had a very bad case of Lyme years ago. Can you explain, do you know scientifically, if you've gotten COVID, but you're also somebody who has had Lyme, is your body more likely to be to have a resurgence of dormant Lyme symptoms?
That's a very good question. I've not seen any scientific data to address that question yet. I'm confident probably people are starting to work on that now, but I'm not working on that topic.
Yeah, because... she's really suffering, and she's suffering, and the symptoms feel familiar to her. Do you know what I mean? It feels
That's correct.
Her body is, yeah. And in terms of that, so you've discussed prevention of Lyme. What are the current treatments for Lyme?
So I work primarily on prevention, not on treatment, but the current treatments for Lyme primarily focus around antibiotic therapy. And the good news is if you catch Lyme early, treatment is usually quite successful. It's when you miss the initial tick bite and Lyme goes undiagnosed for a while that more trouble occurs.
So Dr. Fickrig, before I let you go, let me just circle back. So you believe you've invented a vaccine, you've tested it on guinea pigs that does two things. Number one, it causes ticks to fall off before they bite you, so they can't transmit, before they feed off you, so they can't transmit the disease. And also creates an itchiness on our bodies so that we know that we've had a tick so we can get rid of it, so it's not a silent kind of a vector. So it's like a mosquito, ouch. But what is the next stage in your research, and how long will it be before people get tested with the vaccine?
So the current testing we did of our mRNA vaccine, that vaccine contained 19 components that were in tick saliva. So right now we're asking the question, which of those 19 components is important? So we're trying to make a vaccine that has less components in it rather than 19. And that, we're doing that work over the next year. We're also going to test it in a different animal model. Rabbits get tick rejection. We're going to examine rabbits as well. And then we have made the proteins that are encoded by these mRNAs. And we're going to survey serum from patients who have been exposed to tick bites and ask the question, do they have reactivity to these proteins? Do humans naturally respond to these proteins after they've been exposed to ticks? So we'll be looking at people who've had Lyme disease, because if you had Lyme disease, you've had to have tick bite. And we'll see what their response is as well.
Right now, there seems to be, there has been for a long time, a Lyme vaccine for dogs. And I've always given it to my dogs. Mm-hmm. I mean, is it effective for dogs?
Yeah, the Lyme vaccines for dogs are based on the microbe, the Lyme disease agent. They're the traditional type of microbe-based vaccines, and they seem to be quite effective as well.
So why don't we give them for people? Why aren't they working for people?
Well, there used to be a Lyme disease vaccine available for people, and I'm confident in the future there will be more pathogen-based vaccines, a different approach than we're taking, that are also successful in people as well. And it's possible that these two vaccines could work together. If you target the tick to have it fall off rapidly and target the microbe, Borrelia, so that you kill it with the vaccine as well, you could have double protection.
But Dr. Fickrig, if this vaccine for dogs was successful, and I'm hearing you say that it was successful for people, why aren't we, you know, being recommended to take it? I never hear people tell me that I should take a Lyme vaccine.
There was a Lyme disease vaccine on the market several decades ago. The company stopped producing it, but I'm confident there'll be new vaccines in the future. But there's no current vaccine that people can get that directly targets the microbe.
Interesting. So there haven't been enough, basically, public health on it, right? If the public health sort of resources thought it was important enough, it would still be available. If one company didn't sell enough, we don't have it anymore. Is that the bottom line?
It'd be nice if it was developed again and available to the public. That would be helpful.
Dr. Fickrig, thank you so much. Dr. Errol Fickrig of Yale, thank you so much for coming on the show. Thanks for doing this research to benefit mankind. We appreciate it. We do. Thank you.
Nice to talk with you, Lisa. Bye-bye.
Nice talking to you, too. We'll be right back with more of the Lisa Wexler Show coming up.